This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hi, this is Georgia, the producer of The Missing Crypto Queen. Before we bring you this new episode, I wanted to jump in to quickly tell you about a new podcast I've been working on, which is out now. It's called Burn Wild and is presented by Leah Satilli. For almost 2 years, we've been recording with one of the world's most wanted fugitive environmentalists. The FBI say that he and the group he was a part of are eco-terrorists. But as with the missing Crypto Queen, things perhaps aren't what they seem. So before we get into Crypto Queen, here's a short trailer. And listen to the end of this episode for a longer preview.
How many people who have been on the FBI's most wanted list have ever sat down for a podcast with the BBC?
For over a decade, a pair of mugshots have lived side by side on the FBI's website.
These individuals are considered as terrorists.
In 2005, they were called the number one domestic terror threat in America.
Estimates are $250 million in damages.
The cause of their alleged terrorist actions? The environment.
Our purpose was direct action to disrupt environmental destruction.
How far is too far to go to stop the planet burning?
If it's not me, then it's who? And if it's not now, then it's when?
Burn Wild. Find us now on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Quick warning before we begin. This episode contains strong language. May 2017.
We are currently the fastest growing network in China and in the world.
Dr. Ruja is promoting OneCoin to a packed stadium in Macau, China.
Next year will be the most exciting year in our history.
OneCoin is in full swing. Tens of millions are being invested every week. It's just a few months before Dr. Ruja boards a Ryanair flight to Athens and vanishes. But a few weeks earlier, a very different sort of meeting was also taking place about Dr. Ruja's revolutionary cryptocurrency. In March 2017, 19 officials are taking their seats in a large meeting room at Europol headquarters in The Hague, Netherlands. They're here to discuss Operation Satellite. Operation Satellite is the code name for the top secret international police investigation into OneCoin and Ruja, coordinated by Europol. The FBI, the US Department of Justice, the New York District Attorney, and police officers from the UK, Germany, the Netherlands, Dubai, and Bulgaria are planning how to take OneCoin down.
Many witnesses don't want to make statements at the police. They believe in OneCoin and see a danger for the system when they give a statement.
Each one takes it in turn to share the state of their investigations into Dr. Ruja, her associates, and OneCoin.
Investigation to date. One, financial analysis and money tracing.
It turns out the FBI has been investigating OneCoin for over a year by this point and has already infiltrated the company.
Two, high-placed confidential informant. Three, undercover operation. Four.
They even know where Ruja is sending investors' money.
OneCoin affiliated bank accounts used to receive investor funds presently relevant to U.S. federal investigation. Bulgaria, Tanzania, UAE.
The Bulgarian police tells the group how millions of euros has ended up in real estate in Sofia.
Real estate on the Bulgarian seacoast. Payments of 11.3 million.
The UK City of London police has two officers present. They've been busy too, having recently seized tens of millions of pounds connected to OneCoin and even tried to interview Dr. Ruja herself.
Approach made to Dr. Ignatova through her UK-based solicitors.
But unsurprisingly,
no response.
She didn't seem too keen. What you've just heard was based on presentations given in that meeting, voiced by actors. In the months leading up to Dr. Ruja disappearing, at least five different police forces were secretly investigating OneCoin and Ruja and had detailed information on what was really going on behind the glitzy events and promotional videos. They seemed so close to shutting it all down and arresting Dr. Ruja. So what happened? Far from being top secret, we now believe that Dr. Ruja knew all about this Europol meeting and at least one other within days of them taking place. Because someone, maybe someone present at that meeting, was leaking everything to her, helping her stay one step ahead of the authorities. And the reason you're hearing about these meetings is because someone has leaked them to us too. Who was helping Dr. Ruja? And are they still helping her now? This is The Missing Crypto Queen, Episode 11, Operation Satellite.
Office of Public Affairs.
It's not available.
We've tried to contact the FBI numerous times over the last 3 years, trying to get an interview.
Department of Justice, Office of Public Affairs.
We never got anywhere.
I'll call you back as soon as I get a chance.
But after she was placed on the top 10 most wanted fugitives list, we upped our efforts. We wanted to know whether her being placed on that list was a step closer to her being found. And after a lot of pestering, one of the agents responsible agreed to talk.
The top 10 most wanted list, you know, was created by Director Hoover. Here are kind of the most violent, most dangerous criminals we're looking for.
This is FBI Special Agent Paul Roberts.
And it has morphed into, you know, just the folks that we're looking for the most, the folks that had major roles in major crimes. I mean, folks that have been on this list include Osama bin Laden, El Chapo, and now we have a white-collar criminal, and only the 11th woman to ever be on the list.
Paul's got form in this world. He was involved in the investigation into Bernie Madoff, whose decades-long Ponzi scheme scammed even more money from investors than Dr. Ruja. Obviously, we don't expect the FBI to tell the BBC exactly what they know. But I'm wondering what we should read into Dr. Ruja being added to that list. Does this mean that you believe her to be alive?
We have no information to counter that, so we are operating under the assumption that she is still alive.
Paul tells us that one of the reasons Dr. Ruja was added was because they think the public can help. Even that could be a clue for us.
The public being in a good position now means something more. For example, that it is known she is travelling. It's known that she's out there. It's known that she is moving around, and that's why the public are in a position to spot her.
I don't know that I would say that we have definitive information that she's out there and traveling. We know that, you know, she has traveled in the past. We also know that, you know, if someone goes into hiding, you know, after 5 years, you get a little stir crazy. Obviously, she stole quite a bit of money, and she is going to want to spend that. I mean, why else do you steal that much? You don't want to just stuff it under your mattress and just hang out there and say, hey, I have $4 billion under my mattress. That's no fun. You want to go out there and use it. So, you know, is she out there making large purchases? Is she, you know, going to restaurants? So I'm seeing her going through airports, going through utilizing, you know, marinas or yachts, you know, any of those things.
Are we to read anything into the languages that this FBI notice has been put out into? Russian, Bulgarian, Albanian, Greek, German, Arabic, are they countries of particular interest?
Those are countries that she has known ties to. We know that she has had, you know, financial ties, personal ties, or travel ties to those countries. You know, I think we even mentioned in the announcement that it's more likely she has that support network and that infrastructure already set up there. So those would be places we might see her go, where she could have a safe haven.
Places like Dubai. Last episode, we found a mansion owned by OneCoin's co-founder Sebastian Greenwood. Ruja's brother Konstantin posted a selfie which we geolocated to the property in an exclusive neighbourhood. So I asked Paul about it.
I don't know whether you've seen that or whether you've looked into the possibility of her staying in particular properties in Dubai. Are you able to comment at all on the Dubai mansion theory, I suppose, that we're calling it, that she may have been there for some time, although probably not any longer?
So two things I can say about that. First, you know, we have, you know, said in our public statements that we do believe she has ties to Dubai. historically. So, you know, the idea that she would have a place in Dubai would not be, you know, beyond the realm of possibilities there. The second thing that I will say is in any investigation that we are conducting, especially in the financial crime area, you know, we are constantly looking to locate assets that people have purchased through their illicitly gotten gains. And so, you know, locating these properties across the world is a big piece of our investigation so we can get those funds back to the victims.
Victims like Esther in the US, who you heard in the last episode, or Jen in Glasgow and Daniel in Uganda, who you heard in the last season. Paul told us that it took his team years, but they ended up tracking down 85 cents of every dollar Bernie Madoff stole. That's encouraging, especially because we've carried on digging into that Dubai property. I can't say too much right now, but we have uncovered some more possible connections to OneCoin, and we should be able to update you in the next episode. What we really want, though, is any information, no matter how small, about Ruja's disappearance. Can I just turn a little bit to the nature of her disappearance? You've mentioned both in various court documents and on the notice that the Ryanair flight on the 25th of October 2017 was the last known movement. How confident are you that she did indeed take that flight?
We are very confident that she was actually on that flight, and we have some pretty definitive reporting. But getting into the details of what specifically leads us to that is something that I can't divulge at this time.
And to be honest, a lot of Paul's answers about this went a similar way.
So how active would you say the investigation is now?
I can't say too much about what we have. I can't divulge at this time. I can't comment on that. I won't be able to comment too much on that. Since it is an active investigation, we are continuing to receive information about all aspects of this case.
You're going to have to move into politics after this with an answer like that.
But we press on anyway.
I don't confirm anything about that at this time. What our specific steps are, you know, obviously I can't comment on that. To any current information, you know, could potentially jeopardize, you know, some of our sources and method.
Okay, yeah, I thought you'd say that.
And there was something else that's often been rumoured about Dr. Ruja, that she was being protected by powerful people, dangerous people.
Someone who steals $4 billion has a great ability to influence people to get information to her. There are known organized crime groups that she has been affiliated with. Without getting into specifics on those, you know, we do believe that they are involved in, you know, part of this scheme and especially in some protection of her and some of the other co-conspirators. You know, obviously, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, organized crime groups, they can tend to have connections to multiple levels and multiple people within a country. It certainly was something that factored into our investigation and frankly factored into our reasoning behind getting her on this top 10 list.
What do you mean factored into your decision to get her on the top 10 list?
It's not just a financial crime. You know, she has these organized crime connections and potential that, you know, information about her could lead to information about some of these other organized crime groups. So it's something that we're going to want to continue to pursue because, you know, someone like Ruja and someone like most international criminals, they don't operate in their own little bubble. They have ties to multiple other things that we're going to have interest in.
I see. Is it your belief that they were involved in her disappearance and maybe still involved in her ongoing disappearance?
I think it's certainly possible. You know, as I said, you know, her historical ties are going to be what we believe her current ties are because she has those already maintained. So it is certainly possible that some of these groups may still be involved with her protection and her disappearance.
I'll run this by you, but you're probably, I'm sure you're not going to answer, but one of the questions that's always been on my mind is, and it's partly because people always ask me, because it's their pet theory. They say, oh, there's people behind Ruja, people above Ruja. She was just the front. Really, this whole thing was probably started off by organized crime groups, and they used her as a puppet. And my theory is more like she started this off as a business and was essentially dragged into that world. I'm sure you're not going to answer, but is there any evidence that those organized crime groups may have been involved from the very beginning, or is my sort of reading of it more in line with your thinking?
Jamie, that is a fantastic question that we would love to ask Ruja if we can ever get our hands on her.
I could be way off because I've never interviewed an FBI agent before. And obviously there's a lot that Paul's not telling me
because he doesn't want to compromise the investigation. But reading between the lines, here's what I take from Paul. The FBI know Dr. Ruja is alive, but they don't know exactly where she is. Paul mentioned shops and ports, which makes me think that she's probably moving around. And she's likely being protected by some shadowy people. From the sounds of it, organised crime who've helped her in the past. We've long suspected that, and if I'm perfectly honest, I always half hoped that it wasn't true, because it just makes the story feel a little bit more dangerous. This is the first time, really, that it's been more or less confirmed. One of those houses there. Should we just jump out? Interviewing an FBI agent wasn't the only first for me this year.
There's no police anywhere.
Because a few days before that, one morning in August, Rob and I were in France, this time interviewing someone under house arrest. Something else I'd never done. It's another member of Ruja's inner circle, who the FBI are currently trying to extradite for his alleged role in OneCoin on money laundering and fraud charges.
We just arrived at Frank Schneider's village.
You heard a bit from Frank Schneider at the end of the last episode.
Spot us, because there's not many people around.
But Ruja's trusted advisor and former top spy told us a lot more. Frank asked us not to reveal too much about where he lives. So let's just say it's a quiet village somewhere in France. Tastefully decorated, with lots of books and a well-stocked kitchen. As I walk through his hallway, I spot a small figurine. It's a 007 car.
I've never really met anyone that's been in quite the situation you're in.
Well, neither had I before.
Yeah.
Now, however, this pleasant home is Frank's prison. He's under house arrest while he appeals the FBI's extradition request. The tag he wears around his ankle prevents him from going past his front gate.
Look, I think it is comparable to being told that you have a very serious illness. And so you don't really focus on the end, but you focus on the next day. There is a lot of work to be done. I have French lawyers, I have Luxembourg lawyers.
But even with his tag, Frank is well-spoken, calm and considered. I can see why Ruja trusted him.
I liked her, you know. I didn't dislike her at all. I liked her. There was, a lot of description about her, how harsh she is, how unfriendly she was, how brutal she could be, how direct she could be. But I kind of got on. I didn't disturb me. I found that rather entertaining, really, more than anything else. It felt that she was not such a nasty person there anyway.
I think she did like you, from everyone tells me. Is that fair?
We got on, yeah.
She
yes.
Trust you.
Yeah, we did. We did, yes. She had everything in place. She was. She had lawyers and so on. She didn't fear. She'd never expressed any fear that would drive her to run from anything.
And then, as you heard in the last episode, Frank may have been the last person to speak to Ruja. Georgia, montage please.
Rolling.
She announced that she had to go on a trip. She called me and she said, "Hi, everything's fine, I'm in Athens." Her bodyguard told her that he was given instructions to leave and travel back to Sofia. Ticket to fly to Thessaloniki. I said, "Well, I thought you're the boss." She sort of said, "Yes, I always thought I'm the boss too, but he's gone." And she was in Thessaloniki. She said nobody was waiting for her. She got a text saying that some people will arrive. They are delayed and they're coming. She called and she was in a car. She said that she was on the way back to Bulgaria. She asked the driver where she was. She told me she was about two and a half hours from Sofia. I only got one text in English that said, "Home safe." I only spoke German to her, so I found this "home safe" immediately slightly bizarre. And that was the last I ever received. I believe that she's not missing, that whatever's happened to her, I fear that it's not under her control.
We asked Frank if he could verify any of this trip. Did he still have any messages from Ruja? Was there any evidence of her being in these places, like travel records or CCTV footage? In short, the answer was no. But he did tell us more about why he thinks Ruja disappeared when she did. And more importantly, who he believes helped her.
She explained that according to what she was told, Germany had issued a mutual legal assistance request to Bulgaria, and she was told that it was an imminent search of her premises and her offices and possibly also interviewing her, and that her contacts, whoever they were, didn't want her in the country when these raids and searches were carried out. I asked her, why do you have to go? You are in your country that you control, that you have access to, that you feel safe in. Why are you leaving the country? It wasn't clear. She didn't have a clear answer. But when I pushed her, and I pushed her over and over again, she tended to explode. She said, well, Frank, you don't understand. You have to understand that I have to do what certain people tell me to do. And so I said to
who is they? Do you
I don't know who they are. I have no idea. Her contacts, the people who told her, I don't know who they are. I have no idea. Her people.
Frank, like everyone else, claims he doesn't know where Ruja is. And he doesn't know what she did after Thessaloniki. He says he even hired a private investigator who thought she might have fled to northern Cyprus. But there was nothing conclusive.
If I knew where Ruja was, you know, this would be, you know, one of my trump cards. There was nothing that she wouldn't have mentioned or said, or even if she did want to disappear, she would have told me about it, and she didn't.
One thing that's bugged me about this whole story is why so many apparently smart people worked for Dr. Ruja and OneCoin. Now, I can understand why investors were involved. They were driven by the fear of missing out, by the promise of getting rich. But Dr. Ruja was also surrounded by top advisors, financiers, lawyers, PR companies. Frank was a top European spy, well skilled in spotting deception. And yet he worked for Dr. Ruja right up until she vanished. So I had to ask why. Why didn't he spot this sooner?
Investments are always something which is true or untrue, or you believe in or you don't believe in. And so here, you know, the business model to this day, and I have read your book and I've listened to it. I'm sorry, you say that I am a bright person. I am, I admit, too stupid to understand this business model. I don't understand this business model. I am too stupid to understand cryptocurrency. I believe that in 5 years or 10 years from now, nobody will talk about the cryptocurrency anymore. We will talk about the crypto bubble. Just we spoke about the dot-com
bubble. If it's that bad, if it's that risky and you don't understand it, it's a question I ask everyone. I asked Igor Alberts it. He said, I didn't understand any of it. And I said, so why were you selling it to people? That's the question. You weren't selling it, but you were representing the company working with her. I mean, look what's happened to you since. Do you not regret having...
Of course.
I mean, what should you have done? What did you miss?
Of course I regret.
What did you miss? What did you not see?
Of course I regret, Jamie. Of course I would not take on that client. Of course. This is would have, should have stuff. Of course I would not take on that client in hindsight, knowing what I know. Of course I wouldn't have...
So what did you miss?
I miss? Look, what did I miss? What did 3 million people miss? How arrogant would I be to say that those 15,000 people or 8,000 people in Wembley Arena were all stupid and all missed something? 3 million people missed it, and nobody. I'm not more intelligent than these 8,000 people that also pay.
Okay, let me put it another way. When she stands on stage at Wembley Arena and says, "I'm going to double everyone's coin in the room. Forget the tech. Forget how blockchain works. I'm going to double everybody's coins. I'm going to increase the supply of one coin by a factor of 50, and yet the price is going to remain unchanged." Did you not think, hang on a minute,
if you would have just said this in Chinese, I wouldn't understand it more than what you've just said.
This isn't about the tech. This is just common sense, Frank.
Common sense. This woman was able to persuade millions of people. And she persuaded me, she sold me herself. She sold me on the day and throughout the days and throughout the weeks and throughout the months that followed, she sold me herself. I bought into that.
I feel like I've heard this answer 100 times. I believed it. Ruja was brilliant. And the technology, well, it was too complicated for me. But the things wrong about OneCoin were often just common sense. The technology was just a distraction. Like the investors, maybe Frank wanted to believe. Ruja was also a well-paying client. It's hard to know what to make of him. I wonder if he's telling us everything. He's clearly smart, and he has a lot to lose. But it does seem plausible to me that Frank is telling the truth about the people above her helping her, or even forcing her, to disappear. And according to Frank, that's not all these mysterious contacts did.
She had enough connections to get pre-warnings about various law enforcement activities that were going on. So concretely, when the Bulgarians participated at certain Europol meetings, it only took hours for her to get a complete rundown and get the minutes of what was said in those meetings. I can't tell you exactly who gave her those informations. I know that she got those informations, and I can only deduct that it came from the circles that she was in and the connections that she had through a variety of influential personalities.
Do you know anything about those Bulgarian contacts? I mean, how networked she was there? What sort of people were helping her in Bulgaria? That's a question we've all got, Frank. Everyone's had this question from the beginning.
I mean, and I think you need to start looking at the very, very, very top of that country.
And he gave us something he said would help.
I do have the documents, and I have them here, and I give them to you.
A memory stick, which he says has the answers. As Rob and I hurtle along the motorway to catch our flight home,
he's given us this memory stick.
The significance of that memory stick starts to dawn on us.
We've got to see what's on that. Very bizarre being given a memory stick by someone under house arrest with, you know, vital documents on. If maybe in there's something quite important.
When we get back to London, we hand the memory stick to BBC IT specialists who make sure there isn't any kind of virus on there. When they're done, Georgia, Rob and I meet up again to see what we've got.
Oh, you've got that annoying A on, that's why. That A, it like keeps flicking to that bit.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that saved me so much time.
It's really stupid.
The first thing we find is hours of strange recordings of Dr. Ruja talking on the phone.
Space.
Yeah.
That's probably from her consulting days.
It seems like the recordings have been made by her just days before she vanished.
It's just strange, though.
We've heard a lot of Dr. Ruja on stage or in promotional videos on YouTube, but never anything like this. These are intimate recordings, personal. It's Ruja talking, not the crypto queen. All of the calls are to one man, Gilbert Armenta.
It sounds a bit sad.
An American financier in his 50s. Now, in the months before she went on the run, Ruja was in a romantic relationship with Gilbert, who was also helping her move money. The pair were reportedly thinking of moving in together. But around 4 weeks before she disappeared, Gilbert Armenta was arrested by the FBI and became an informant.
But people are surprisingly good at acting, aren't they?
Under the FBI's instructions, Gilbert started recording all his phone calls with Ruja. It sounds like he was pretending that he was being investigated by the American IRS, that's the Inland Revenue Service, but it was nothing to do with Ruja. That seems to be his cover story, but little known to the FBI, Ruja had figured out what Gilbert was doing.
Can we listen to that clip as well?
These audio files seem to be Ruja recording her side of the phone calls to Gilbert. Right up until the 24th of October,
the day before she took that Ryanair flight to Athens.
Should we play?
Yeah.
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 I really worry about you. Like, is there anything that you can tell me or whatever? I don't know. Are you okay?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm not.
Why was she recording these calls? Maybe to try to figure out what Gilbert was up to. Maybe in case she ever ended up in court.
You know, I don't believe him. I don't believe anybody anymore. You know, it's just like...
Rob, Georgia and I listen to the recordings over and over, trying to figure out if they can tell us anything about Rouge's plans or her state of mind.
Man, how do they...
Looking for clues that might help us.
All this shit. It's just unnerving. Unnerving.
I get the impression that she's sort of probing. I think she already suspects that he's working for the FBI. Keep going.
You know what my opinion on things like this is? It's very, very clear. You know, if you have nothing to hide, whatever information they have access to, it's okay. It's exactly what I've been telling you. Even if people had access to my mail, to my office, to whatever, I am very firmly not only believing, I know it, because all of our lawyers, all of our people confirmed that we have done nothing wrong.
Well, I mean, she definitely knows she's being recorded.
Yeah.
Doesn't she? I've done nothing wrong.
It's a bit like when your boss walks in and you're on the phone and then you're like, yeah, everything's going really well, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
This whole investigation is about us. Maybe for them also it's time to talk to my lawyer, to whoever. Like, we are not invisible. We are actually very, very easy to reach. So if somebody wants to talk, they are fucking welcome to come and talk to him. That's it.
We've listened to nearly 3 hours of these conversations. Most of it is unconnected to OneCoin, but occasionally it does come up.
Ironically, they haven't brought OC up for the last 2-3 weeks. They asked me what our relationship was. We provided contractual relationships. The only question came up is, you know, how long the relationship lasts, etc. Other than that, no, I think.
Relationship, so we speak business relationship, right?
This is business relationship. Yeah.
As opposed to...
Personal.
Yeah.
It's a strange dance, this. Gilbert recording Rouge. Rouge recording Gilbert. So it's hard to know what to believe, because both Gilbert and Rouge are lying to each other, playing out a role. But there are snippets that give us new insight into her personality. And even though we know what she's done, it does kind of make us laugh.
Wait a second, let me try to be understanding, girlfriend. Failed.
That's it.
No, I cannot be understanding, girlfriend. Fuck. I hope I have some other qualities.
Jesus.
You know, yeah. What comes next? Me cooking for you or what? Fuck. Yeah. Oh my god, she killed Gilbert. Oh my god, she killed Gilbert. Oh no, sorry, baby. Oh.
She, just having listened to a lot of this, she's definitely, I've seen a different side to her. She's a lot funnier.
Yeah.
She's a lot more personable, sort of irreverent, messing around, joking.
A bit spiky as well, yeah. Right? A bit kind of...
I can see people would have liked her as a person as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the crypto queen on stage. It's another side of her that she probably used to charm her advisors, to charm her top staff.
To charm people like Frank, perhaps. But there's a lot more than audio files. There are dozens and dozens of files, contracts, legal opinions, bank records, internal emails. We're still working through them. But the most significant files are restricted and confidential police documents taken from Europol meetings about OneCoin that took place in late 2016 and early 2017. Detailed minutes, attendee lists, and confidential UK, American, German, Bulgarian, and Dutch PowerPoint slides about Dr. Rouge, about her money, and about her associates.
Look, oh, that's the one, the PowerPoint slide, Operation Satellite. The
City of London Police, this is a presentation of their investigation, God, that they're presenting to Europol.
Holy shit, so this is City of London Police's PowerPoint slides about OneCoin.
This is the US presentation, right?
So and, she'd got US?
And so this is in this 2017 meeting, and what we're looking at is a money laundering diagram.
Overview of the investigation into OneCoin. Major Economic Crimes Bureau open grand jury investigation sharing with City of London Police. They were all over it and she knew it. No wonder Ruja seemed calm all the time. No wonder she sounded so confident on those calls just a week before her disappearance. Because she knew all along the state of police investigations into her. She knew she was being looked at and who was looking at her. What they knew and what their plans were.
So I wasn't there when you were obviously with Frank. So what did you, how did he say this, he's got this?
Frank gives us this memory stick and Frank says all these police files, all the stuff about their ongoing investigations and what they know, Ruja knew as well. Mm-hmm. Ruja was being given them and it was Bulgarian officials who were giving them to her. What he's saying is Europol meetings about this investigation into OneCoin, the meeting notes, the PowerPoint slides, everything was ending up with Ruja. So she knew what they knew. Now, Frank said it came out of there on a memory stick, out of the Europol meeting somehow. Rob, is there anything we can say about the actual files? Because obviously these files contain like metadata. They contain data about when things are saved and when they're edited and stuff like that. So can we look at that in case that gives us anything?
Yeah, we can have a look at the metadata.
And the metadata is like data about the data, so it tells you just a bit more about when it was saved and who by and who made it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and this is the German one, and we can see that they were last saved by someone with what looks to be a Bulgarian name. Mm. And they were saved on the 30th of March 2017, so a couple of weeks after the meeting. But what Frank has suggested to us is that that person was at the time a member of staff, the part of the Bulgarian government that had officials at this meeting. We've spoken to people at the BBC that, you know, IT specialists that look at this kind of thing, and we're going to try and find out what we can, and we're still in the middle of that process. But in a nutshell, we shouldn't see it as conclusive.
It's not conclusive, but it's probably the most likely way that this information has got to Ruja.
We asked Europol and all of the police forces that attended the leaked meetings about how documents may have been leaked. None of them would confirm how the information got out. German authorities told us,
no position is taken from here on internal police documents that may have become known to the public.
The City of London Police didn't respond directly about the leak, but in a statement, Detective Inspector Paul Curtis told us,
the City of London Police concluded its investigation into alleged suspects linked to OneCoin in the UK in September 2019. Three individuals were arrested in relation to this investigation, but no charges were brought against those arrested by the City of London Police.
From the Netherlands, the Fiscal Information and Investigation Service, that's the agency responsible for investigating financial crimes, told us that they
do not know how the presentation came into the possession of Dr. Ruja Ignatova. Do not know who was responsible for this leak.
And
have reported this leak to our business security officer.
Europol asked for more details on the leak, but told us that
Europol is connected with over 2,500 competent law enforcement authorities, and international investigations are often carried out with multiple agencies in different countries. This complex scenario with many stakeholders makes it difficult to assess where and how such an incident might have occurred.
The FBI did not comment. We did not hear back from the US Department of Justice, the New York District Attorney, Dubai, or Bulgarian authorities. Last week, Frank lost his appeal against extradition to the US. It looks likely that he'll be facing justice in New York. The question we want to answer now is who was leaking all this stuff to her? More importantly, Are they still helping her now?
Hey.
Oh, hey.
Nikolai, are you happy for us to record this?
Okay, sure, of course.
Good to speak to you again.
So we called up an old contact of the series.
I know it's late for you.
Bulgarian journalist Nikolai Stoyanov, who helped us back in Sofia and Sozopol way back in episode 2.
Yeah. Not
that late. And told him what we'd found out from the files that Frank gave us.
That's, well, something. Yeah, it seems like the likeliest possibility of the leak is that it leaked from Bulgaria anyway. So it's not a huge surprise, but it would be really sad to confirm it here from Bulgarian point of view, of course.
The second thing really is whether you'd be open to us coming back to Bulgaria and basically showing you what we've got, talking you through what we've got, and whether between us we can figure this out.
I'll be happy to join you, and okay, let's set it up.
Remember, if you have information about Dr. Ruja you would like to share with us, you can reach us at cryptoqueen@bbc.co.uk.
Well, I'll be able to buy you those beers I owe you as well.
Yeah, not until I've done the job, probably, because after several beers we'll start to see links and people everywhere.
Episode 12 will be out soon. I'm sorry I can't tell you exactly when right now because this is an unfolding investigation, but we think it will be ready by the end of November. Okay, and then I'll just read the end thing, shall I?
Ad-lib.
The Missing Crypto Queen was presented by me, Jamie Bartlett. It was written by me, Georgia Catt and Rob Byrne. The producers were Georgia Catt and Rob Byrne. The commissioner is Dylan Haskins. The series editor is Philip Sellers. It's a BBC Documentaries production for BBC Sounds and BBC Five Live. Shall I just go? The music is by Phil Channel and Desislava Stefanova and the London Bulgarian Choir.
You actually gonna do that?
I could. What was wrong with that?
Are you serious?
No, do you think that's too much? You did tell me to ad lib.
I don't know if we can use that.
One final thing. The official BBC series book, The Missing Crypto Queen, written by me, Jamie Bartlett, delves even further into the story of the rise, disappearance and fall of Dr. Ruja Ignatova, and it's out now.
While you're waiting for the next episode of The Missing Crypto Queen, which we are hard at work on right now, there's another podcast I'd love for you to dip into, another story where, as you peel back the layers, a bit like with The Missing Crypto Queen, nothing is quite what it seems. It's called Burn Wild. It's produced by me and presented by a journalist called Leah Satilli. So please search and subscribe to Burn Wild now.
And it's brilliant.
Oh, thanks, mate.
It's really good. Hang on. Have you even said what the podcast Burn Wild is about?
Well, I'm really bad at doing this. So here's a little taster.
How many people who have been on the FBI's most wanted list have ever sat down for a podcast with the BBC?
I think about how many people have been murdered, how many people have been brutally tortured. And how did I get on the most wanted people in the entire country of the United States?
For over a decade, a pair of mugshots have lived side by side on the FBI's website, on its list of America's most wanted domestic terrorists.
The FBI is offering a reward of up to $50,000 for information leading to the arrest of each of these individuals.
The U.S. government says they were a part of a movement whose reign of intimidation and fear was so great that in 2005, they were called the number one domestic terror threat in America.
Any way you look at it, these individuals are considered as terrorists.
Their names?
Joseph Mahmoud Dibe and Josephine Sunshine Overacre.
The cause of their alleged terrorist actions? The environment. And now, one of them has been caught.
Do you think we could talk to him? I mean, have you floated this by him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of
from the moment they started, like, we're going to put you in prison for 35 years. Well, that was pretty serious, and it hasn't really relented any.
I'm Leah Satilli, and for the past 18 months, as Joe Dibe's case goes through the court, I've been trying to understand who the two fugitive eco-terrorists really are, beyond those mugshots.
Oh, I think they would be heroes.
And what the truth is about a group known as the Earth Liberation Front.
A myth.
No way.
Answering it will take us into radical activist communities past and present on both sides of the Atlantic.
How do you deal with these massive, like, environmental problems?
You know, it's why I thought it was necessary. You know, it was necessary to take such drastic action.
In my work on extremism, I've covered a lot of stories about the far right, why people resort to violence, commit actions that leave people dead, and how society responds to that. In this story, it doesn't quite fit that mold.
The terrorist label being applied to activists who very explicitly take kind of extreme measures to ensure that no one is injured, I think it reveals the priorities of our government.
To the authorities, those two fugitives and the group they were a part of are violent extremists.
I think it would have continued to escalate.
To their supporters, they're warriors.
A lot of us were hearing about what was happening. A lot of us were excited about it.
People will take away very different things on what they hear.
You could have been blown apart, you know? I mean, for a piece of wood.
But where you sit on what they did isn't a question of what happened in the past.
No matter how long this takes, we're going to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Huge plumes of smoke rose above London as grass fires engulfed homes.
Last year, the temperatures got to 115 degrees. A bunch of farm workers here died.
So this is the thing, right? They didn't die, they were killed.
There's a real biting sense at the minute that things are reaching ahead.
At the heart of this story is a question being asked again right now.
Maybe there are more people who really want to do whatever is necessary to make change. I don't know what that is either.
How far is too far to go to stop the planet burning?
If it's not me, then it's who? You know, and if it's not now, then it's when?
They try to destroy our lives. That's what they accomplished, in my view.
Burn Wild on BBC Sounds, or wherever you get your podcasts.